could stop talking any minute. So, but it worked out in the end. So we're on lesson 8, and it is increasing in wisdom. So, clicker. Oh. Okay, actually, that reminded me. Sorry, it doesn't matter how many times I speak in front of you guys and how many of you are my really good friends. I always get nervous and jump around, so it'll take me about 5 minutes to settle in. Ryan's got handouts. I made them. They sort of go just along with the lesson. And there are chunks in there that are fill in the blanks, so they're super easy. There's also some area to write down ideas. What I would do with them, once you're done with lesson 8, fold it up, stick it in lesson 8, and then you've got that right back there, okay? And really simple. There's a section on there, too, for thoughts, questions, and there's a little bit of a homework section. I'll go over there at the very end, and we'll talk about that. So if you like a handout, there you go. I probably made way too many, but I'd rather have too many than too few. So there we go. So this book is broken up into sections, right? We've got our 7 steps to zeal. And so far, we've gone through prepare and ignite. The lesson that LR did on Wednesday night was the last step in the ignite, right? And it's sort of like how you start a fire. Because you remember back those first few lessons, he's talking about how you build a fire. You got to have fuel, and you got to ignite it, and then you got to do all this stuff. And so we're at the fuel stage, okay? The next 2 lessons are about fueling. So if you've ever made a fire, you know that once you get it started, if you don't feed it, what's going to happen to it? It's going to die, right? Yeah. So you've got to put fuel there. And so these lessons are about setting us up to have the fuel that we need, right? And so if you've ever made a fire, Stephen and I did a camping trip the other day, a couple of months back, and I threw a bunch of wet old leaves in there, and he looked at me like I was crazy, right? Because what everybody knows, what happens as soon as you put the wet old leaves in there? Either A, the wetness is going to kill it, or B, it's going to smoke everybody out, right? And so I didn't use the right fuel. So this is going to be about using the right fuel. And so this lesson is going to be about the quality of our fuel, okay? And the things that we are doing to fuel ourselves to get up. I'll also add, we've got a mic. Stephen has it. If you want to say something that's longer than a sentence or two, please raise your hand so we can get everybody on the stream that is listening so they can hear it, and that's also where we rip the sound from to make the CDs. So if you want to say that, if it's short and you just want to say it out and I'll repeat it, we can do that too, okay? Don't let the mic intimidate you, okay? So let's start. I like to have goals because I like you all to know sort of where we're going. So if I have a lesson without goals, I just sort of wander and amble. So let's look at our 2 goals for this one. The first goal is I want you to understand, I want all of us to understand, that zeal without wisdom is dangerous, okay? So zeal without wisdom is dangerous, and that's your first couple blanks if you want to fill that in to sort of follow along. And we'll get into that a lot deeper. This is going to be some interesting discussions about some of the stuff that we're going to get into. And then understand the limits on our zeal, okay? We really haven't talked about limits yet, have we? We haven't talked about that. We've talked about that we're supposed to be zealous, that we're supposed to go out there and we're supposed to spread the word, but we haven't talked about, is there a too far with that? Is there a too much? Is there a not enough? And so we're going to get into some of those limits today, okay? So, make sure my notes are where they need to be. Questions so far, anybody? I will stop for questions, and if you don't have any, I will keep moving, but here's the thing. I try to work the whole room. So if I'm looking over here and you got a question over here, John, make sure you wave your arms real good so I can – I'm not an owl. I don't have that peripheral vision. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Okay. So the first question I want to look at and the first question that Mr. Shoemate gets – by the way, the guy that wrote the book is our speaker for Hilltop Summit, one of them. So when he gets here, if you got really hard questions, save them for him. And then he can answer them. But I think it'll be interesting to hear him speak and get to talk to him a little bit about his book. So the question is, can we have zeal without wisdom? And if you're sitting over here, sorry, it's hard to see because it's only there. But can we have zeal without wisdom? Yeah, I'll do the easy way.
I was going to say, for years I worked in sales, and one of the things I trained salespeople too. And one of the things I saw all the time was people would oversell something to the point somebody didn't want to buy it. And what it was, they didn't use wisdom. There's a point in teaching somebody the gospel or sales that the person is ready to do something. And it's so easy because you're so excited that you want to put all this extra on there. And you're so excited about something, you're using your excitement without wisdom. You're using that without the wisdom. Know when to stop. You got the person who's interested and ready to take the next step.
Excellent. Yeah, the answer to this question, if you haven't figured it out yet, is yes. You can totally have zeal without wisdom. And if you don't believe me, look at any three-year-old who is super excited to run out the back door, get on the trampoline, and try a double backflip out of nowhere, right? That's zeal, isn't it? They're excited, they're on fire for that trampoline, and they're going to go on there, and they're going to bust their head open, right? Because do they have the wisdom to know that I am not an Olympic gymnast, I cannot do a double backflip without practice, okay? So, yes, you can totally have zeal without wisdom, and the Bible does talk about this. So let's look at Romans 10:12 real quick. So Romans 10:12, it's on the screen, and I'm playing with, like, it's hard because when you do this at home, you have widescreen, you got to shrink it down. Some of the verses I'll put up here, and some of them I'll just ask you guys to turn to. But it says, "Brothers and sisters, my heart's desire and prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. For I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge." So what's the background of this? The Israelites, the Hebrews, the Jews, the Pharisees and Sadducees, were they zealous? You cannot look at them and say that they're not zealous, right? Were they zealous for God? He even says they were, right? But he throws in there that their zeal is not based on knowledge, or some translations use wisdom, right? So, what came out of their zeal without wisdom? Persecuting Christ. Persecuting Christians, even into the first, second, third, fourth, fifth centuries, right? They had zeal, but they didn't have knowledge, and so that throws us off. So, before we go too far, I want to ask a question, and we're going to come back to this question, I hope, if I can remember. What are the consequences of zeal without wisdom? I went to school to be a teacher for 6 years, and one of the things that stuck was wait time. So if I ever stop talking and look at you guys, that means talk to me, people. Tell me something. Yeah, up here, Jeff. Somebody had their hand up over here? Yeah, you get him, I'll come over here. Yeah, the Apostle Paul early on, very zealous, murdered. Well, it helped murder a whole bunch of Christians. Okay?
It's just like misdirected actions, mm-hmm. or actions without a good ending. So it can be just a waste.
Sure. Yeah, and you can mean well. You can really, really mean well. But without the wisdom or the knowledge that you need to present those facts and those ideas, are you helping? Are you hurting? What is it? And one of the things he brings up is, and there's a few times I'll use his quotes, and it's right here after these four bullets. He says, "When religious people are fired up but foolish, God is never glorified." Okay? Fired up but foolish. And every one of us in this room can probably say at some point in your life, you were fired up but foolish, right? We see a lot of new Christians that do this, right? They get baptized and they want to do XYZ so quick, or they want to do this and this and this, and you just, they're not ready for it, right? They need to learn the basics before we jump into the advanced. Questions there? Anybody else? The four points he brings up here: discouraged others with careless words, divided a church with their selfish ambition, drove away honest seekers with impatience, and disrupted good works with unfair criticisms. I think those last two are personally attacking me, because as I read that, that's what I hear, okay? It's like, Sean, you drove away honest seekers with impatience. When people are asking questions that you've known the answer to for 10 years in a religious or spiritual setting, how hard is it not to go? Like, for me at school, I read a lot, right? So reading is something comes to me. So when a kid reads something, I'm like, it's there. It's literally words in front of you. How come you don't get this, right? You got to temper yourself. How do you not understand that Christ died for your sins, and that makes it not okay that you're sinning, but it is a forgiveness thing, right? So don't hold yourself, don't beat yourself up. Do the penance and move on, kind of thing. We get that. Older, mature Christians get that, but sometimes young Christians sort of get tied up, right? So it's sort of there. And disrupted good works with their unfair criticisms. I will admit to this, and this is just something that I came to. When we first built this, when we first came and saw the building, we weren't attending here. But the fact that there was a place for the person to stand behind the person in the baptistry, I've always in my entire life seen both of them go down into the water, right? How many of y'all before, like back in the old days, you had to do that? So when I saw that, I immediately thought, well, that's silly. Why can't they just both go in? And I remember I was talking, Mike had brought me and Aaron in because we were living in Louisville. And I was like, after a while, I was like, why am I thinking that, right? Because traditionally, we'd always done that. We'd done it that way. So I'll admit that's something there. It was just a silly criticism about something that doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter the person doing the baptism. Does they have to be in the water with you? Is that a requirement? This is what we've always done, so my brain immediately went to that. Or how many of you all get a little worried when, like, just out of sorts when we sort of change the order of worship a little bit? Or we do this instead of that? And you're like, well, I just don't like it. Well, what's the problem with it? Well, I just don't like it. Unfair criticism, and that hinders, that's a lack of wisdom usually. How we doing? We good? Ready to move on? Anybody else? Okay. So, how do we know if the wisdom we have is right? Because could we teach, I could teach, well, I probably couldn't, but somebody real talented like James or Stephen or anybody, any of the adults in here, could teach a class about wisdom, and we could teach it for a year, and would we have the wisdom of the Bible in our head by that point, after that year? Maybe some, but not all of it, and so we'd have to go another year. And it would take a long, long time, right? So there's a wisdom test in James 3:17. So what James is talking about here is, how do you see if the wisdom you have comes from heaven or from God? Is it heavenly wisdom? And so he says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is, first of all, pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. So that's the wisdom test. So let's do it real quick, just go through those seven steps of the wisdom test, okay? And once again, I'm going to be honest. When I volunteered to teach this class, I then went home and looked through the book, and I thought, man, this is going to... I looked at it a little deeper than the cursory glances I've given it for class. I'm going to say, this is going to be hard, because I'm going to be talking to myself a lot more than I am here. Because one of these seven, if one of these seven doesn't jump out at you and personally attack you, you're perfect, and we need to learn from you. So one of these seven is going to stand out at you as something that you should work on when you test your wisdom. So first one is that it's pure, okay? And I gave you seven little spots if you want to write these out. It's pure, okay? When we think of pure, we think of always the pure as the, my grandfather would say, pure as the driven snow before the dogs get out. And so you know what it looks like. You look out the window, you wake up, it's that first more like snow, you weren't expecting it. You wake up and you're a kid and you look out the window, snow everywhere, right? Can't see the road, it's white, it's clean, it looks good. And then you and your little hoodlum friends go out and trample it down and make it look all nasty. So pure, right before then, when you first step out in your snowsuit, you can't move your arms, right? So is the wisdom you have pure? Is the wisdom you have peace-loving? Now, this is hard, because peace-loving always gets a bad name, right? Everybody thinks back to those long-haired hippie people, right? Always talking about peace, peace, peace. As Christians, we're supposed to be about peace, right? So is our wisdom peace-loving? Is it something that is going to lead to peace, or is it, what's the opposite of peace? War, division, conflict. See, I like to say conflict instead of war, because if you say war, some people are like, okay, well, we're not marching into their capital and shooting them, but conflict really is the opposite of peace, right? Okay, the next one. Consider. I keep forgetting the screen's back here so I can see it. Is it considerate? Considerate of who and what? That was a hard question for me, because it doesn't specify. So what should we automatically assume about this, the considerateness of our wisdom? Considerate of who? Others. Like the earth will just said others, right? Other Christians? Most definitely. Other people? Yes. What about the people who don't agree with us? Yeah. It's hard. Okay? It is very hard. I like to debate and argue, right? And that conflict and that division, that's hard for me, that peace loving. Is it something that is going to be develop peace, right? You got a James right here.
This is one of those things that we have to be very careful about, especially when we start talking about others that don't agree with us. We start talking about them, much less talking to them, and we use violent language. I had a young man in my house some years ago sitting watching television, and a show came up or something came up, and there was a gay person on there. And he looked at me and said, I'd like to take a baseball bat to that person. And I almost lost my mind. But I looked at him and I said, first of all, that is inappropriate for a Christian to think like that, much less talk like that. Violence against people, regardless of what you may think about them, is not Christian, period. And the second thing was, that's not acceptable in my house. I don't tolerate that kind of language in my house, that kind of abuse of other people talking about it. Even if you were joking, he was kind of surprised him. He did not know how to react to that, because apparently it was something that was acceptable around people, and it's not.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that quite a bit more here in a second when we talk about the limits of our zeal. Yeah. Yeah. Which brings up an interesting point. I'm gonna have something for you here in a little bit on that. Okay, so peace, love, or considerate, submissive. That's hard, right? It is hard to submit. We are Americans. We are rugged individualists. We do not want to submit to anybody, right? It's hard to. Aaron will ask me to do something. Literally, I will take my clothes, and they'll be this far from the laundry basket. And for 17 years, she said, why don't you put your clothes in the laundry basket? And the part of me just want, every time, I just want to be like, because I never have, and biting my fingernails. That's the other thing. I bite my fingernails. I'm going to give you all my sins before we leave today. And she's like, do you want fingernail clippers? And I said, if I did want them 17 years ago, I don't want them now. Okay? Now, the submissive part of me, which should really just say what? Yes, please. Thank you. But it's hard, right? I know none of you other people have a problem with that. That there's just that one or two things that you refuse to try to submit about. But submissive. So is your knowledge, is your wisdom submissive? Once again, to who and what doesn't really say. So, blanket statement, I would think. Next, I hopefully left you enough space to write this down. Full of mercy and good fruit. So you got apples and oranges, but no papayas because they're gross, right? Man, you gotta, hopefully Wednesday night you guys are going to be a little more like awake, laughing. I need to get my amen section up at the front. Wednesday is the first day of school for Warren County, and then Thursday is the first day of school for city schools where I teach. So I'm going to be even, if you think I'm nervous now, I'm going to be even more of a ball of energy then. We're going to get class in like 10 minutes because I'm just going to get it out. So full of mercy and good fruit. Mercy, what's mercy? Unmerited favor. That's grace, man. That's on the COC handbook, right? But mercy, yeah, unmerited favor. I always think of it, how many of y'all played the game Mercy with your friends? Where you hold each other's hands and like you try to make the other person hurt and be like, mercy, mercy, or uncle, right? Anybody ever played that game? That's what I always think of when I hear mercy. You're begging that person to stop because it just hurts, right? So, but on our part, mercy, it's full of mercy. You are giving people the benefit of the doubt. You are granting them mercy with your wisdom, okay? So, if Finley comes up to me, he wrongs me, my wisdom should lead me to give him mercy, correct? And then the good fruits part, we know the fruits of the Spirit, right? It's a whole another class. We can do whole, I think we did a class on the fruits of the Spirit, and it lasted 26 classes, right? The whole quarter. So, if it's not having that, is your wisdom from God? Impartial. Everybody has some kind of bias, okay? It's just part of being a human, right? You have I personally, if you put an olive on a food, I have a strong bias towards that food. I don't care if it's the best thing. It's made by whoever, like Guy Fieri. some famous chef. If it's got olive in it, I don't care. It might as well be dog turds in front of me, okay? I won't eat it. Is our wisdom impartial? Do we have any bias in our decision-making? And the one that I see that come up the most is we'll go to talk to a friend that belongs to another denomination or another church, and we will automatically assume that everything they do is wrong. And that's hard. That's a hard bias that we get, or that they don't care to change. And that's something we talk about a lot in the high school class. And one of the kids brought up, it was actually Abby brought it up, she said, my friends that are in other churches, they are so zealous, they're so excited, they think they're right. I said, I know. 99% of those people think they're right, and that's why they believe it, right? So if you go attacking that, you're showing that you're sort of being impartial, but, I mean, can't compromise on the truth, though, right? Or the other thing is we automatically ascribe a negative motive to some of these other places and churches. They believe it. Now, if you get up to the higher ranks of people who know that they're bilking people out of millions of dollars so they can open up their mega churches, I think those people sort of know that they're sort of running a racket. But some of those people believe it, right? And we automatically say they're doing that because they're evil and they want to hurt the true church. And it's not true, right? That's a bias that we need to get over. That's very partial instead of impartial. And then the seventh one, is it sincere? Are you doing it because you truly love God and lost souls and people? Or are you doing it because it's a checklist box? Oh, I'm supposed to help poor people. Oh, I gave that guy a sandwich on the side of the road the other day. Check. Or I went and I taught, I went to the jail, did prison ministry, because I'm supposed to. Check. Or did you do it because you really care about those people? That's a hard one, right? Because we see all the time, social media culture, we see everybody's best, and we think we're not doing as well, right? So that sincerity sort of comes in. Did you post that because you wanted to share it, or did you post that because you wanted other people to think you're awesome? Now, you probably wanted to share it, but in the back of your mind, did you probably want people to think you're pretty awesome too? Yeah. That's another one of my pet peeves, is these videos of people who film themselves going out and doing nice things for homeless people. I'm like, don't film it. Go do it. You can tell us about it later, but don't film it. That's just even more. That just goes a step above. So we're going to get to this. If I have to, we're going to fight through. We're going to come back to this list. So if I ask you about the wisdom test, this is the list I'm talking about, okay? And we're going to talk about that in our homework section. So there we go. Any questions before we move on to our critical limits? Because I'm about 4 minutes behind where I'm trying to be on my timing. Questions? And I would gladly cut my material out to hear what you all have to say. So, okay, two critical limits. Zeal must be exercised. I know some people see exercise and they're like, no, I'm out. That's another one of those biases. Exercise is good for you. I know it don't look like it, but exercise is good. Do it, people. My free life lesson for the day. Remember Brad used to give us free, everything free? That's your free one for today. Go exercise. Zeal must be exercised two ways, for two things. And this is our limits. One, with moral integrity. Okay? With moral integrity. And we're going to get deeper into this here in a second. And then two, in spiritual battles. Okay? In spiritual battles. Now, when I first read this lesson through for the first time, I was like, okay, in spiritual battles, great. But this is one of the places that I sort of disagree with how he worded it. I wish he would have worded it a little differently, because he's expecting us to read the exclusionary at end of this, okay? What is he leaving out? That it's not, if it's spiritual battles, what is it not supposed to be? And then the whole point is about what it's not supposed to be instead of what it is, okay? So we're going to talk about that in a second. So everybody got that written down? It's going to be on the screen here in a second. So, by the way, my handouts, if there's not enough space or if you'd like to see something else on there, tell me. I love feedback, and I do not take... If you tell me something, I will not take it as criticism unless you come up to me and say, this is criticism, and then lay it out, right? I will just take everything else you tell me as constructive feedback, because I want to be better, and that's how we get better. So let's go on. So zeal must be exercised with moral integrity. What does this mean? What is moral integrity? What is integrity? Living in Louisville there are, we lived in Louisville, Aaron and I did, for about 7 years. And we lived on the Indiana side of the river, what we called the sunny side of Louisville. And one day, a barge ran into one of the, when we were there, it was only two bridges connecting. It was two bridges. One of the bridges hit one of the bridges in New Albany, the Sherman Minton Bridge. And they talked about integrity. Oh, it doesn't look like there's anything wrong, but the engineer said, yes, the integrity is damaged, right? So it may not look bad, but it's what? It could crumble at any minute because you got 50,000 cars a day going over that thing. Yeah, go ahead, John, sorry.
I was going to say, integrity is doing what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
And when we look at moral integrity, that means if you claim to live a certain way, then you fulfill that claim and you live that way. You don't live a life of lies.
Yeah. I had a student who sort of turned me on to this. There's like a movement called Because I Said I Would. And it is about having that integrity. If you say you're going to do something, you do it. And it came about where a guy had, I think he was drunk driving, hit a car, severely injured everybody in the car. And he said, I'm going to plead guilty. I know I did it. I'm not going to ask for any lenience. I'm going to do this. And when it came, he said, the judge said, why did you do that? You had a reason. There's like a technicality he could have got off on. He said, because I said I would. And so he started making these cards that he sent to people. He said, you know what? Because I said I would, I'm going to do this.
I think you need to take that a step further and say that it's not just doing the right thing when everybody's watching. You have to do the right thing when nobody's watching. That is true integrity.
True. And that's hard. And that's like, I'm talking about those personal attacks we're going to have a whole bunch. When you can learn to recognize, what's the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous? First step in having a problem is what? It's admitting that you have one. I've never been to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've seen enough TV shows with it that I know that's how it works. And they say hi to you. So, but when you can admit that you have that problem, that is the real step. And that's when you can really make some growth. So the one that I threw up there is the ends do not justify the means. And being a history geek, I always think back to the Crusades. The Crusades were going to rescue the heathens of the Middle East and get them to be and Christianize it, right? More Christians, isn't that a good thing? Right? Would you, okay, shake your heads. Would you want more, who wants more Christians? Yeah. But we're going to do that by invading their army, their lands, and murdering everybody along the way. And then we're going to give them a choice, convert or die. And then even when some of them convert, we're still going to kill them because now they're saved. We can kill them and they'll go to heaven, right? So was it a good plan? Or was it a good idea? Sure. The execution was a bit lacking, right? Which 1 Peter 15:8 is what he goes to and what I sort of thought about it as I was reading it. By the way, when I put little chunks of empty space there, if there's any other verses you want to write in or there's any comments people make or that I make that you want to add, just that's where I left you, that big space right there. So the ends do not justify the means. And a phrase that I got that I kept thinking of over and over, if you have to say that before you're about to do something, there's probably something, if I just do this, if I just lie one time, if I lie to this person about the reality of being a Christian and make it not sound so bad or so hard, not bad, take that off the recording, and make it sound so hard, I could win this person over. Is it worth it? We see it with our friends in some of the bigger congregations in town. If we build an awesome youth center, we can bring people over. And we'll win them in, right? And at least they're here. But do we compromise our moral integrity when we lie or we cheat or we steal for a good purpose? That's hard, right? This is a hard one, right? Because sometimes it is easy. It is easy to compromise your moral integrity because no one will know if you do that little thing, right? Nobody sees me tell this little lie. Nobody sees me do this to win souls or to get this happening. But it's the tainted victory, right? It's like if you look up Mark McGwire in the baseball paper. Mike's in here, so I can say a wrong stat and he won't call me out. Is there an asterisk next to his name? Yeah, and Sammy Sosa, because they both got caught on the juice, right? Who's the other guy with the asterisks? John knows. Barry Bonds? Yeah, there we go. I'm not a sports guy. So, 1 Peter 1:5-8, for this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, to goodness knowledge, knowledge to self-control, self-control perseverance, perseverance godliness, and to godliness mutual affection, and mutual affection love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. So if you get smarter, if you do these things right, it works, right? So this is a hard one. Got to move on. So the next one, zeal must be exercised in spiritual battles. Okay? Spiritual battles. Sorry, I pace a lot, and I'm usually trying to make sure I stay in the camera back there. So if that's distracting to you, please tell me, and I'll, like, lock my hands down. But I like to move. So spiritual battles. So when you go out to fight ghosts and demons and that stuff, that's when you can use your zeal, right? Right? Wrong? Okay. So the point of this that he makes is that violence and punishment are not ours to dole out. I don't think we have any officers in the police officers, right? Any jail employees or governors who have to, like, sign execution orders and stuff? So none of us have this job, okay? That's something we need to remember. Our job is not violence and punishment. What is our job? Serve God. What's that? Convict and convert. Seek and save the lost. S-A-S-T-L was the one that we always heard when I had a high school teacher in back in my home congregation. S-A-S-T-L. Seek and save the lost. That's our job. It's not to punish them. It's not, as your friend said, the baseball bat thing. We can disagree with people and still love them, okay? I disagree with people all the time, but I still love them, okay? You guys, I'm sure you do that too, right? That's our job. You can disagree with their sins. You can say that what they're doing is a sin and still love people and not wish them ill. And I know that's hard to think and that's hard to believe in our current climate because everything is so polarized, but people are not our enemies. They are lost souls that we are sent to seek and save. And through wisdom, if we see that, we can know that that's how we should react, okay? And that's hard. That is really, really hard. I teach American history, and we get into, the Revolution. And we talk about the protests during the American Revolution and all that stuff. When you really look at it, a lot of people think at the very beginning of the Revolution, there was only about 30% of the American colonists that really wanted to revolt, right? And that slowly gets bigger as the different things happen, the Tea Act, Intolerable Acts. And so we look at that and we're like, yeah, that's a good thing that they did that. But if you look at some of the writings, John Adams, one of the most interesting things about John Adams, you know, he was the lawyer for the two soldiers that got arrested for shooting people in the Boston Massacre. John Adams was the other lawyer. And somebody asked him, why did you do that? He said, because they are children of God as much as I do, as I am and you are, and they deserve the inalienable rights that we are fighting so hard to convey to others. That's rough, right? So if they can do it, we can do it. Oops, sorry. Sorry, guys at home. Didn't mean to hit that. And there's a lot more we can get into on this, and this is one of those that it's real easy to step on toes right now. But I do want to mention what James talked about. Violence is not just, I'm going to punch you in the mouth. Okay? Violence is the threat of violence as well. It is the use of language to either belittle or try to coerce someone into a certain action. So our language can be violent. Okay? We need to think about that. We need to think about that in the words we choose. I'm terrible at that. Okay? Because there are words that I've always used that may not be the best choice. And now that I put this into this frame, I think, okay, that's something I need to work on. Because our words can be just as violent as punching somebody in the mouth. Okay? We there? Anybody with me? You ever heard that sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me? I took a psychology class when I was going through my education degree, and they said sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can give me psychological scars that last the rest of my life and break me down. And I was like, that, it means something, right? And then we talked about eating disorders. She said sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will give me bulimia. And that sort of stuck it too, right? So we got to think about that. So, and this is the thing that always comes up. But what about the Old Testament? They murdered all kinds of people, right? David went out and killed how many Philistines? He said, get this many foreskins, and he went double, right? He went for the bonus prize. But we got to remember, in the Old Testament, every example of this is a sanctioned member of a government or an army acting on the sanctioned government roles, okay? So, am I saying that you cannot be a police officer? Or actually, remember, police officer's job isn't to punish, it's to capture and serve and protect. But you can't be a jailer and put people in jail? Because it's God's job to punish. I would say yes, you totally can do that. If you want to be a police officer, great. We need good, God-fearing people as police officers serving. We need people in jails. We need people that are serving in any of these roles in the army. That was a big debate. I remember, can a Christian serve in the military? You can answer that question one of two ways. Some people would say no. If you read Alexander Campbell's early stuff and some of the early church writers, or not, when I say early church, I mean early restoration writers, they would say no. It's not your job. We're supposed to be apolitical. We're a kingdom of God. Some of them didn't even consider themselves as like citizens of the state they were in or as Americans. They considered themselves Christians that happened to live in America, which is interesting, and they get a lot of writing about that. So Romans 13, we all know what Romans 13 says, right? What's Romans 13? Anybody want to quote it? Because I'm about to be out of time. Romans 13, be subject to the governing authorities. And if you don't want to worry about what they, I'm paraphrasing, by the way. If you don't want to worry about them harassing you, what should you do? Do what is lawful or right. Some say right. Just do what's right. If you're cool, they're not going to, don't start nothing, won't be nothing, is what I tell my students all the time, right? And that's what the police officers who come into my classroom, we do our unit on local government. They're like, look, it's like your teacher, like I tell kids, I don't want to write you up. The police officer says, I don't want to arrest anybody. That's a pain in the butt. That's a lot of paperwork, right? But if you don't start nothing, it won't be nothing. So, questions about this before we move on? Because I want to get to the big main points. So fighting the good fight, there's two things that I really want you to take away from this. One is that when we use wisdom, wisdom allows us to use our zeal in ways that lead to growth, okay? Quote from Morgan Freeman. No, it wasn't Morgan. Yeah, Morgan Freeman. Get busy living or get busy dying. He said that in Shawshank Redemption, right? So sort of the same way. You're either growing or you're not. So if you have that wisdom to grow, you're either growing or you're not, or you're shrinking, okay? Next thing I want you to see is lost souls need zealous, loving Christians seeking them out. Okay? So we've talked about zeal so far, but I'm going to add that loving part there. Okay? And I could almost add another word. What's one more word? Zealous, loving, wise Christians seeking them out. Okay? And if you are one of those zealous, loving, wise Christians and you see people that are going out there and they're zealous and loving, but they are unwise, what should your job be or your role in that relationship be? Help them. Fix it. And it is uncomfortable. It would be very uncomfortable for me to go to James, say, James, I love what you're working on, but when you said X, Y, Z, you were wrong. And James and I have a relationship where we could do that. And he'd say, okay, show me the scripture where I'm wrong. And we'd go back and forth for a little while, and then we'd talk about vocabulary and all that stuff. But it's hard. I could probably do that. If I'm looking around the room, there's probably five people in this room that I could go to, and I say, you're wrong about this. Let's talk. Yeah, maybe five. But I would feel comfortable with that, right? And it should be better than that, right? Because we should have the relationship where, because I think if I, like Matt's one of those guys. I think I would admit to Matt. Matt knows that I am doing it in a loving way. Or if he came to me, I'd be like, okay, cool, let's look at this. But if somebody I don't know came to me and did that, I'd be like, that's hard, man. you sure you're talking to me? So, or that we need to talk. It's like, you got a rat in your pocket because there's no we here right now. So, okay, reflection question. So I like to give you things to think about. And as we move forward, and so this, and I was trying to think of some catchy thing to say this. This is your car conversation. When you get in the car, after you talk about Mike's amazing sermon for a few minutes and how great it was and how energized you are from it, I want you to talk about this. Which quality from James 3:17 are you going to struggle with? Okay? I like to start with negatives when it's a reflection because it's like you swallow the frog, right? You get it over with. Just do it quick. I'm going to take medicine, just done. So what of these are you going to struggle with? What is it that's going to be hard for you? And if you want to tell me, great. If you don't want to tell me, great. I'll be around for questions if you have them. Otherwise, thank you guys for making my first class excellent. Appreciate it.